organizer and host of the Smartest Telesummit 2007. I've also been taking care of my coaching clients who want to present themselves and their art with credibility and confidence. And before that, I wrote a little book about a wee grain of sand in an artist's shoe, The Artist Statement. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But before I start, I want to just make a note. The handout that you have received is not an outline of this presentation. It's an extension. So you might want to take a few notes. For the most part, I recommend just a few key words will do the trick. You'll see as we go along. This does not need to be extensive outline. The thing that I want to really make clear is that the artist's statement bridges the inner worlds and the outer worlds of what we do. And if you as an artist are not used to this bridge, not used to connecting the outer world and your inner worlds together in a conscious, attentive manner, it could feel really uncomfortable. And I don't want you to assign a larger meaning to your discomfort with it's just discomfort with the unfamiliar. That's all that it is. So what I want to talk about first is this email I got, which I think starts out in a really good place. This is a woman who is actually the wife of an artist trying to help her husband put together his marketing. And as such, she's taken on the task of trying to figure out what an artist statement is. And she says, the biggest problem is that this seems to be such a personal thing, and that it seems that it almost has to be created by the artist. Well, she's absolutely right. An artist statement is always a personal thing, and it does have to be created by the artist. But the artist doesn't necessarily have to write the entire thing. And at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you some ways that you, if you are not comfortable with the writing part of it, some other choices that you have. But the artist has to be part of the process, has to be a co-creator in many respects, or it will not work at all. So what exactly is an artist statement, and why do you want to do this? So do you give up? Are you just tired of getting tangled up in your own web of words? Do you even have a web of words? Or how many drafts have you started and then tossed out? Or how long have you stared at a blank sheet of paper? Or how many times have you thought, oh, I have to get to it today? Or how many other things have you managed to do just to avoid trying to write an artist statement? You know, an artist contacted me, this was a few years ago. He told me that he had a gallery in Soho who wanted to show his work, but they needed an artist statement. And when he got a hold of me, almost a year had passed since this gallery had asked to show his work. And he was still not showing in that gallery because he had not been able to write his artist statement. Another artist asked me for help in writing her first statement, which we did with all the attending hiccups, because it's so tempting to hide the vulnerable and personal self who creates art behind aloof words and spiritless sentences. So imagine her surprise after her statement was completed and put in a show when a collector told her that the artist statement was what convinced her to buy three pieces. Now, it's true. An artist statement isn't going to take the place of good artwork. So obviously her work had some calling for this collector. But it was also clear that layering the artist statement alongside the calling of the artwork sort of finished the deal. It sealed the deal. So it is with utter assurance that I call the artist statement an indispensable grain of sand in your artist shoe. Small, yet infuriating. It demands your attention, and with good reason. Many years ago, there was an artist and a creator of a publisher that used to be called Art Calendar. She no longer does this anymore, Barb Doherty. But she made a point at that time to research the lives of artists who had been successful in making a living from their art. She was out to see what effective strategies that she could apply to her own life as a working artist. She was sort of doing what we've talked about many times here, research. And as we might imagine, what she found was not well-written business plans or careful promotions, even though these can help, but three basic ingredients that she turned up. One was a huge inventory representing work, work, and more work. These artists knew how to produce, how to turn it out. Second was that artists had support systems in place. They had family members who might be able to tackle the organizational tasks that were too draining for the creative spirit. Or they had friends, or they had groups together that of other artists that supported each other. And third, surprise, surprise, she discovered that it was artist statements, where the artists used language to take the viewer of art on an inside private journey. This is both the essence and the effectiveness of an artist statement. You build a bridge between what the art patron is looking at and what the artist knows. Now, why would we do this? Because human beings are creatures of language. As any of us who've been parents of young children realize, in our human need for multiple layers of communication, the visual world, even though it's mesmerizing or disturbing or profoundly moving, is just not enough. Words may feel inadequate, more off than on, less intimate than our image, but words are persistently there in our heads, coming out of our mouths, inching their way across the paper or the monitor screen. Whatever misgivings we may have, words are there all the same and all the time. And it serves us as artists well to learn how to use words to our advantage. An artist statement is essential in your portfolio, and it is vital for your website. I'm going to talk more about that in a couple of days when I talk about websites. But the artist statement expands your connection to your audience. Read collectors. It also garners the professional respect of gallery owners and helps rank you higher in search engines. So with so many pluses, what on earth is all the fuss about? What is so gosh darn daunting about putting a few measly words down on paper? Three paragraphs is the minimum, and one page is the maximum. So I have a few mistakes that are routinely made that I'm going to address. But before that, I'm going to unmute and just make sure that we're all on the line together. Hang on. Hello, artists. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, great. It makes me a little nervous, you know, when I don't have another speaker to talk to. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, is anybody out there? All right, hang on. I'm going to go back to mute and keep going. Here's mistake number one. Confusing your fear or discomfort with writing the artist statement as a mark against the artist statement itself. So in spite of your misgivings, don't most of you have this kind of nagging feeling that an artist statement is important? You're just not quite sure why or how to do it? Well, I want to reassure you that the problem is not the artist statement itself. It is truly just a lack of awareness about what an artist statement does for the artist. So what does it do? Well, I've touched on this. It's an answer so simple, it pretty much astounds people. Here it is. Your artist statement creates another layer of connection to your audience. That's it. Simple, as they say, but not necessarily easy. Now, what's so important about creating another layer of connection? Well, the human brain works on creating multiple ways of connecting. Remember what Allison said on Friday, that we're all so bombarded? Well, the difference between bombardment and connection is that humans feel when someone is authentically connecting. We just do. We know the difference. An artist statement, when done well, creates connection, not bombardment. So why has artist statements gotten such a bum rap? Well, I don't know about you, but for myself, I've noticed that so many of them are simply badly written. And they're badly written for one of several reasons. Either the artist doesn't understand the reasons for writing one, and the subject then can be to explain things that are out of our cognitive reach, or the artist's posture telling us about their art and why it's so great. I think it's also about language. And this is a really fascinating area. I have a theory here. I've talked about it many times. I call it the public-private paradox of language. When we come in to the world, we have language as part of our way of orienting ourselves here on the planet. Children naturally begin to speak. They speak the language of the culture that they're in. It's as natural as breathing. It's a developmental process like learning to first, you know, roll over and then crawl and then walk. Language is very private in the beginning. It's ours. We own it. It sits and lives in our bones. And then this thing starts to happen. The language that we are so enmeshed with, that is so much a part of who we understand ourselves to be as we start to move in the world, gets to be more public. And it can start with parents. It can start with siblings. It can start with friends. It is cemented irrevocably when we start school. All of a sudden, this language that's been so private and personal, now we have these other people telling us not only what we can say, but when we can say it. And suddenly, our private language enters this arena where others are in control and authority and language start to play a tug of war inside of us. Here we are adults, and now we're going to work with something as private and intimate and deep as our art, and we're going to put words to it? I don't think so. It's like, oh my gosh, here we go. We're being jerked back to that early memory of when language was taken from us in some very basic kind of way. And I'll explain more about how we can reframe that and work around that, because we absolutely can. Mistake number two, believing or thinking that when you say, oh dear, I'm so sorry, you guys have been, I feel like you've been battered over the head with us by everyone. My art speaks for itself. That this is an effective way to deal with the whole philosophical and practical issue of an artist statement. Now you can wash your hands of it and walk away. It's a tempting reaction. It's almost instinctive when faced with a task that some artists I know put right up there with cleaning out drain pipes. But I think in my heart that it's really just a misunderstanding about what an artist statement really is. But first, let me tell you what it's not. It's not a bio. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to make a little detour here to just remind all of you that part of the deal when you signed on for the Telesummit was you get my book, Writing the Artist Statement, Revealing the True Spirit of Your Work. Most of what I'm giving you here is reiterated in the book in different ways. So if you're feeling worried that you're going to lose or miss something, you are not. And the book, as you'll see, is very spacious and written with lots of white space for those artist eyes who go nuts when a piece of paper is just crammed black with type. So I think you'll find it a really good companion to today. So you can just kind of relax and know that a lot of this is going to be in there. An artist statement is not a bio. Now, the tricky part is it could have elements of a bio in it. So the fact that you watched your father turn a lathe impacted why you create vases out of burl now. So that may be important, key piece of an artist statement. But the whole statement isn't going to be a biographical statement. The key is weaving the specific biographical facts into your artist statement that makes sense. The next thing it's not a critique. You are not called upon to comment about your art, what it means, what is it good or bad, which of course you're always going to say it's good, right? But by critique, I'm really talking about any language that implies a value system. We're going to leave that up to the art critics. Beautiful, inspiring, soulful, meaningful. These are all terms that I've seen artists drop into their artist statement. You don't want to ever do this for two reasons. One is that you are actually taking away from your reader when you do that. That's the reader's job. That's your audience's job. That's the collector's job. They're going to look at your art and go, oh my God, that's so beautiful. It takes my breath away. If you do that for them, if you sort of jump in ahead of the game to tell them that's what their experience is going to be, you've cut them off from authentically connecting with your work. So stay away from value system language. So what is an artist statement? An artist statement worth its salt will never try to speak for your art because it's not about your art per se. It's about your relationship to your art. And that's a different story, yes? And it's one your collectors are dying to hear. This is the part where you have to really understand that what you might take for granted, what might be obvious to you in what you're doing, is not necessarily obvious to anyone else. And everyone loves a personal touch. They want to rub shoulders with the artist. They want to get a peek behind the canvas or the marble or the choreography. Everyone. Human beings, we're hardwired for story. We thirst for story. People Magazine came on the scene, I'm thinking maybe 20, 25 years ago, and they just, you can call it tacky, you can call it, public, candy for the public consumption. But the truth of the matter is, haven't you sneaked a peek at a People's Magazine in your dentist office? I know I have. Why? Because we're just a sucker for story. We want to know about each other. And, I just really don't buy that it's a gossip issue. I know gossip has got a really negative connotation because it's about putting people down. But I think if you look behind gossip, what you really find is this thirst we all have to be connected to each other. And we can't get connected unless there's something personal going on. It's like trying to say, I want a car. And that nonspecific car conjures up nothing. But I want, a 1985 Mercedes-Benz convertible. Okay, now we're on to something specific. And now you know something about me, which, by the way, not a whole lot of people know until I made that comment, that I don't even care about cars. But there's something about a Mercedes-Benz convertible from the 80s that I just find very appealing. When you know something about another person and you've established connection, you immediately begin to build a form of trust. And artist statements are about building trust. Here's mistake number three, scaring yourself that you have to explain your art to your audience. What does it mean? Why is it important? And will it take its place in the annals of art history? You do not, nor should you ever, explain your art. If for no other reason, then again, the fear of putting off your readers. Now, I know that among some of my colleagues, I'm a little bit at odds with them on this one. But I'm going to stick to my guns here. Because I really feel that explaining does not invite connection and often has the opposite effect. Most of us, if you pay attention to yourself, when people are just explaining something to us, we get a little put off. It's sort of like, well, gee, I could have figured that out for myself, or gee, don't I get a chance to figure anything out here? Or gee, are you the one who has the last word in my experience of looking at your art? So what I think works a whole lot better is creating language that invites connection through revealing. You reveal what goes on for you with your art, and then we, your audience, get to peek in, and we can agree or disagree. If you explain it, it implies that we, your audience, cannot disagree with you, and so it automatically limits our experience of your work. And who among us ever likes to have our experience limited by the demands or explanations of others? And you would be surprised, really, how much you can tell your audience about your work using the personal story as a vehicle. Here, I'm going to give you a really tiny example. I want you to compare these two statements. And the way I want you to do this is close your eyes. Just, you know, humor me here. I'm going to ask you to do this a couple times on the call. Just close your eyes. And as I read these two statements, they're both one sentence long. I want you to really feel where in your body you're having any impact at all, if you are having an impact. Okay, here's the first one. This is an artist statement. My collages are a political commentary on the extremism of those in power. Okay, here's the second one. The artist is speaking. As I manipulate the digital images, layering the bits and pieces of a collage, I can feel my own political rage simmering in the background slashes of red and black, or the hypocrisy of our leaders in the dirt, gold, and broken bones. Now, if you're honest with yourself, you'll notice that that second sentence made you suddenly come just a little bit alive. Didn't you just kind of lean forward a little bit more? Didn't you just kind of want to know a little bit more? Did it not even make you wonder what this person's art looks like? That's the difference between revealing a part of your personal story. Now, I know that some of you are going to get nervous, and this I've noticed in my women clients, this is much more true than in my male clients, that this whole notion of revealing can bring up some kind of nasty old stories we've got simmering around inside of us. Let me reassure you that this revealing is boundaried. You have boundaries. You do not have to reveal what you don't want to. You reveal only that which is makes sense to you, that feels good to you, but you do reveal, and you reveal authentically, and you reveal specifically, no generalities. Okay, mistake number four, confusing arrogance with authentic hype. Did you notice your reaction just then when I said authentic hype? Did you experience a kind of odd sort of jerk around, like, what the heck? How can hype be authentic? Aren't these contradictory terms? Again, this is pretty tricky on both sides of the gender story. Okay, now I'm going to ask your patience because I'm going to speak in fairly large generalities. But also I'm going to address what has actually come from my experience of working with both my women and men clients. In general, I preface, in general, women worry about overstating their abilities, mostly because they don't even believe in their own abilities in the first place. And this goes back to Alita today and the myths that she brought up. You notice when artists asked her specific questions, she returned it back to them to get them to dig out the myth. And each time you could see this deeper place of not believing in your own abilities. And in general, men don't often hesitate to believe in their own abilities because they seem to be graced by a culture that validates their right to be good at something. This doesn't mean men don't have issues with believing in themselves. They just aren't necessarily as concerned that if they believe in themselves, it means they might be stepping on someone else's toes. Women need to learn, and men need to learn, that we are allowed to toot our own horns. We can create authentic hype. God will not strike us down with lightning, nor will we be visited with 7 years of locusts or boils or the plague. This is reserved for those who toot their horns and step on the gas at the same time, which is where I think tooting our horns got such a bad name in the first place. If someone is about to run you down and is tooting at you at the same time, the auditory conditioning tends to linger for a while. So perhaps we should change the language here. How about we are allowed to speak highly and well of ourselves, even if it annoys Aunt Martha, God bless her honest soul. But there are ways to toot our work that work and ways that don't. And I'll give you a bit more on that a little later. Mistake number five, not creating the space for your artist statement. Creating space is different from, but still connected to, making the time to do your artist statement. Oh dear, there's that T word again. But I'm going to take away the excuse of time because I'm going to give you an assignment that does not take a lot of time. It does take paying attention, and it comes next. This is where you do want to take notes. When I get to it, I'll let you know exactly where you go. Mistake number 6, imagining that you have nothing to say. The truth is, you talk to yourself all the time about your art. How could you not? We do this in our heads 24/7. You can't make art and be brain dead. It's just not possible. But what happens? We are so used to dismissing our own thoughts as being of little consequence, and we don't even pay attention to our mind chatter. So here's where I want you to take the notes. There are 9 tips on how to catch your authentic and unselfconscious language about your art that you get into all the time. Number 1, treat yourself to a cheap spiral notebook. I suggest the half-size one so you can throw it in a bag. I suggest you marry this notebook and pretend you're on a honeymoon. You may take it everywhere, in the car, to the store, beside your bed, and especially in the studio or wherever you do your art. I do not recommend that you do this journal that Alta was suggesting for this artist statement, that you keep this little notebook just for the artist statement. It's part of creating the space for the statement so that you start to give it validation. That little grain of sand starts to take on a larger luster. Number 2, treat your artist statement with the same care that you treat your art. They don't speak for each other, but they are extensions of each other. In a way, they are Siamese twins. It's hard to care for your art and not care for your artist statement. Number 3, use a writing implement that rests comfortably in your hands and flows smoothly across the surface. A pen that just feels wonderful, a pencil that feels wonderful, especially if writing is difficult for you. You want to create as much pleasure as you can from the experience. And these are the details that you pay attention to because they signal to your unconscious brain that you want it to pay attention. And then your unconscious brain will join you in a partnership of getting this done so much more easily than you can imagine. Number 4. For a few weeks, jot down every thought that comes to you about your work. Fleeting specks count as much as Grand Canyons. Give yourself permission to gather, and here's the key, without judgment. Selecting and sorting out comes later when you have enough in your basket. Number 5. If conceptual thoughts aren't happening, then pay attention to your body. What feelings come up when you work? What parts of your body have experiences you aren't paying attention to? That floating feeling in your head, the lift of excitement in your belly. You'd be surprised at how much comes up once you validate your own story by paying attention. Number 6, make specific times and dates. Put it on your calendar when you're going to take your notes and transform them and start to write your statement. Respect these times. Do not tolerate interruptions. Again, our subconscious pays attention to what we give attention to. Just think about how when you worry a lot, that's your lens for the moment. If you're filling up your attention space with worry, then you cannot be filling it up with care or love or concern for something else. Number 7. Before you begin to write, I recommend a little exercise. So once again, I want you to humor me here, and I want to do this with you together just so you get the feel for it. It's really helpful to let yourself experience this completely, and it's amazing how effective it will be. So close your eyes. Now, I want you to conjure up in your mind's eye of your imagination your worst critic. This person is yammering away at you. Oh, you're never going to amount to anything. Your art's no good. What do you think you're doing? Who do you think you are? I want you to just let this person take shape. It's okay. We can make them go away. Don't panic. Just let them take shape. Once they're fully there, I want you to reach out your hand. I want you to reach out your hand and lead this person from the room in your imagination. take them outside, tell them, climb a tree, skip stones, head over to the local library. Tell your critic that you will absolutely bring them back when it's time to edit. Critics are terrified of being abandoned. That's why they're so tenacious. So reassure your critic that you will set a place for him or her at the editing table. Critics are also notoriously stubborn, so you may have to do this more than once. Okay, here you go. Conjure up your critic. Listen to them yammer. Now, put your hand up in front of you in a stop motion and say to your critic, okay, I really want to hear what you have to say, but not now. Now I need to just write from a different place. I need you to go outside. Bring them outside. Tell them to go do something specific, whatever it is they want to do. Reassure them. You will call them back when you're ready. Okay. You can open your eyes and come back. Number 8. Write more than one statement. Like different works of art, an artist statement also thrives on change and rising out of the moment. What suits this month's work may be too tight for next month's. Don't be afraid to keep writing them. Number 9. This is very important. Give yourself permission to write badly. Make mistakes. Crumple up lots of paper balls and toss them in the corner. It's the beginner's way. This is Natalie Goldberg's advice in Writing Down the Bones, which if you like writing at all and want to figure out how to do it better, it's a beautiful, easy little book that's really fun to read. Natalie Goldberg, Writing Down the Bones. When you give yourself permission to do it badly, then when your statement comes out great, which it eventually will, you will know the difference. Okay, those are the 9 ways to get started on capturing your own authentic voice and what you really tell yourself about your art. Here's the last mistake, number 7. Imagining your words are set in stone and therefore could become your enemy. I want to remind you that words are no more your enemy than the color you choose or the marble you select or the metal in your hands ready to shape. Each element you choose in your work can be changed, ditched, reworked, tossed out, and words, too, can be deleted, changed, and reworded. Nothing is written in stone. That said, you always want to take an artist statement and give it to at least 5 people you trust to tell you an honest reaction. An honest reaction you listen to only if 2 or more people are saying pretty close to the same thing. That's the place that you're going to want to go back and rework it. So right now, let's try this little exercise. On the paper that you have next to you, which I'm just assuming you have next to you, I want you to tell me, Ariane, what you do and how you do it. I know nothing about how you go about making your art. Can you tell me the process in as few sentences as possible and do what Olive has suggested before? Don't worry about grammar or punctuation. Just put it down, you know, so that if I read it, I would know what you do and how you do it. And I'm going to you're going to get 2 minutes for this, and that's it. And we're going to start now. One minute has just passed. You have a minute left. I'll give you a 30-second warning. You have 30 seconds left. have 13 seconds left. Stop. And I mean, I'm serious, really stop. I don't care if you're in the middle of a sentence. Put your pencil or pen down right now. Okay, let me explain why. Timed writing, as uncomfortable as it may make you and as nervous it may make you, is a really useful tool, and I highly recommend it when you're doing something that has the vulnerable emotional components of an artist statement. Why? Because it pushes that part of your brain that wants to worry you with, oh my gosh, how does this sound? It kind of pushes it off the mat because you're beating the clock. So it's a really useful mechanism, even though it makes you feel uncomfortable. You can always go back and do an untimed version if you wish. But in my book, I have several timed exercises that I highly recommend you play around with. Now, this is trickier. We're going to do another two-minute one. I want you to tell me why you do what you do. What motivates you? What inspires you? What drives you to work? Where on earth did all this art making come from anyway? And I'm going to want you to pick up your pen, maybe flip your paper over to a clean or get a clean sheet of paper, and you can go. 2 minutes. I'll give you 1 minute warning. All right, 1 minute left. Seconds left. Okay, I want you to stop. Put your pencil pen down. Now take both of those pieces of paper and put them away from you so you're not looking at them. They're not in your mind's eye. An artist's statement is personal. It's as personal as your art. It's also honest. In the same way your art reflects a true expression of your being, your artist's statement needs to speak to the authentic you at work. When it's done well, the two support each other. However, a lot of artists get stuck on this one. When I say authentic, I don't mean 1,000% accuracy. An artist statement is about flavor. You don't want or need to tell me every single detail. You just want to give me an idea, an example, one example, that's it. You only have 3 paragraphs to 1 page. It's not a lot of space. So flavor is good. 1,000% accuracy is unnecessary. In the beginning, write way too much. Write tons and tons and tons. It's always easier to take away than plump up. If there are things you want to take away but you love them, I have a little file drawer that I have. It's called my gym file. And I throw sentences, word phrases, whole paragraphs that I just love but don't work in that particular venue. I just toss it right in that file so I haven't lost it and I don't feel like I'm losing anything to take it out. So now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk briefly about different kinds of artist statements. Remember, you're not going to make everyone happy. Not everyone's going to like your artist statement. It's about you. Different styles. It has to suit your personality. Artists want me to show them an artist statement that I've done or that an artist has done that I think is good. They always want an example. And I'm really very hesitant to offer one. Why is that? Because each artist has such a different personality. If you are a nuts and bolts kind of person, you're not going to want a poetic artist statement. And if you're a poetic kind of person, you're not going to like a nuts and bolts artist statement. So I don't know what kind of person you are. You just say, give me an example of an artist statement. What if I send you a poetic artist statement and you're a nuts and bolts person? You think you're going to respect that statement? You think it's going to resonate with you? Not very likely. So one of the keys to keeping an artist statement yours is to make things specific. So you don't want to do general statements unless you use a general statement for an introductory and then you back it up with a specific example. I'm going to read you, even though I just said that I don't do this, I am going to read you some artist statements to give you a feeling, okay? This first one is an artist who has big issues in his art. World politics, if you have something like big issues, world politics, love and redemption, you still want to keep it personal and directly connected to your art. No soapbox monologuing works. It puts your audience off. Remember, the key to an artist statement is it makes your audience want to come closer to your work, not push them away. This is a sculptor. Here's his statement. While gathering materials for a new piece, a hobby horse, a steel ladder, and a coiled spring, a baby carriage, a disassembled wheelchair, and a glass box, I find myself listening to a visual voice that speaks to me through a series of internal images. In the beginning, I process these images in my mind through intuition, insight, and an intellectual commentary that plays on the cultural climate that surrounds me. The physical construction of my sculpture emerges as these inner images are first built, raised, and rebuilt in my mind's eye. I may take the sacred memories of a wheelchair, which was a faithful chariot for my mother's friend, and enshrine the disassembled parts in a glass box. Or I might combine children's toys and adult inventions to create a satirical relationship between objects. So a little red wagon outfitted with a trigger that ignites a smoking engine becomes my objection of immature behavior that soils our environment. A triangular folded flag lined in a glass box filled with oil becomes my rejection of the distorted messages saturating our media. In my own way, I take the confusing, disassembled parts of world powers, corporations, governments, and religions, all fighting to create the world in their own images, and I assemble a response, a material witness to my own creative process. If I can create enough tension between memory and metaphor, if I can provoke the stimulation of another worldview, then these symbols and icons of our everyday life just may be able to stand the test of time and the intentional coming together of my truth. So you can see that this artist takes big issues but makes them very personal and communicates that in his artist statement. Here's a very different one. And just hang on there because I think we may go over just a bit. So those of you who have to jump off at 3:30, you know, the recording will capture it all. I'm going to just keep going here. This one is about not being afraid of your own language, painting a picture with words. This painter loved jazz. She loved staccato rhythms, and she felt that her paintings were akin to poetry. She liked the richness and drama of life in her work. So she has a really different artist statement. Here's hers. I paint fast. No initial sketching, no easing into it, just the immediate force of oil paint flowing across continents of virgin space, textured, dense, satisfying oils. Paint, scrape, paint, scrub with rags, wipe it down so the colors glow, so the spirit of a thing cannot be held back. I paint furiously, balancing on a beam of too much or not enough. Do I dive deep or float, add or subtract? How does one steady the points of power, of texture, line, and form? Intuition informs what reason shapes. I paint the inside of a thing first before I scrub it down, prepare a soul for its earthly skin of cat or curtain, bison or blackbird, of what we might lose or what has lost us. What is erased becomes alive underneath. Fast, I move fast before the strength of the moment is gone, before I've lost to myself. So much of this world draws me in, stimulates me. Sculptural forms aching for color. A woman leaning forward, a cat's foot lightly placed, that deteriorating wall in Greece with the color underneath erupting. I paint fast, for how else can I play the colors of the difficult, the deep, the unrefined, or keep up with the brooding notes of Mahler that fill my studio, with the way paint moves around on my canvas, and how the marvelous tumbling accidents reveal the clear power of a life lived beneath what glides above? How else can I tell the strong stories that hold us, the old pain that calls for strokes of compassion, and the bold spirit wind of creation that keeps me alive? So I paint fast and furious, stirring up the bottom to bring forth new life. Now, that statement might really put some people off because it's not your personality, it's not your style, or it might terrify you because you think you don't have a way with words. But remember, this is specific to this artist, okay? Here's the last one I'm going to give you. This is a photographer, and this is very different. Again, stay away from general statements unless they lead you to a specific. See as I read this what you can see here about specifics. This one is titled the Chaco Canyon Series because this photographer wrote an artist statement not about all of his work, but about one series of art that he did, which is another way you can use the statement very effectively. Chaco Canyon Series. I first traveled to Chaco Canyon in the summer of 2002 and was immediately struck by the wild beauty of the landscape around the Pueblo ruins. I sensed a reverence for this center place, a reverence that I imagine the builders must have felt. Their spirits inspired me to hike back season after season, leaning into the harsh winds of cold mornings, melting under the boiling sun of the afternoons. Why would these people choose to build a community in such inhospitable surroundings without the aid of the wheel or pack animal? How did they develop this architectural technology in the space of a few hundred years, one that would leave an indelible mark for those to come? The Chaco Canyon series of black and white photographs reflects my desire to understand this sacred landscape and the spirit of an ancient people. In keeping with another tradition, I print in a chemical darkroom from medium format negatives to approximately 10-inch square. All photographs are printed on silver gelatin on a fiber-based paper. Each print is selenium tone, archivally processed, and then mounted and matted using museum-quality cotton ragboard. There, I've finished those three, and I hope they've given you some sense of what moves forward. I'm going to open up the lines for questions. Please mute yourself, star 6, if you don't have a question. Okay, here we go. Hi there, artists. Anybody have a question they want to toss me?
Ariane, this is Suzanne in Colorado. I sure do. I would love to get a copy of those artist statements to read them again. Is there any way to do that?
Oh, I might get my arm twisted even though I don't like to do it. Sure. Why, if other artists have that same desire, I'll just kind of send it on to the group, even though keep in mind the caveat of what I've said. Anybody else have a question?
Ariane, this is Steed Barber in New Mexico.
Yes, Steed.
And I was so involved in tip number 10 of the 9 tips on about capturing my self-talk.
Yes.
I completely missed number 8. Could you just repeat that?
Hang on. Let me scroll back here and get to number 8. Write more than one statement because your works of art change, your statement changes. So you want to just kind of stay current with where you are.
Thank you.
So don't be afraid to stick to one. Anybody else have a question?
Ariane?
Yes.
I was wondering when you were talking conjuring the critic, if it would be useful or destructive to conjure an actual person.
That's a perfect thing to do. Our critics are very grounded in our historical realities. They're part of our story.
Great, I'm not crazy then.
No. In fact, it'd be stranger if you didn't have a critic that wasn't a real person somewhere along your storyline. And actually it's very useful because it gives you a lot of information about who's living inside your skin right now.
Oh, thank you.
You know, and feel free. You know, the thing about critics is they had authority at one point in our life. Now we are the authority. And you have to remember that reversal of roles. You have the right to boundary and tell your critic exactly what you expect and don't expect of that part of yourself.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Another question?
Are we on?
Yes.
John, storage house.
Hi there.
California. This is really eye-opening, and I thank you for this very much.
Wow, I don't know who's doing that, but it's driving me nuts. Can somebody figure out what there, what's going on with that?
It's your
sound?
It's letting you know that it's you're running out of time.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh,
yes,
thank
it is.
You.
You're
okay.
Welcome.
Okay, well, we may not get this recorded, but let's just see if my dear Bridgeline man will let us keep going.
The reason, one of the things that held me back, which I didn't think you've mentioned, but I will mention it to the group, is that every artist statement that I've seen, pretty much 90%, is just pure BS. And turned me off so much. I mean, I also used to make a living writing as a copywriter. Writing. And my conception of that was all artist statement have to be like 90% BS. And
no. In fact, those are the worst kind, and they're why artist statements have gotten such a... It's why I wrote my book, because I wanted to really set that record straight.
Such a revelation to me.
Good. Well, when you get the book, it'll be full of those kinds of revelations.
Well, I thank you for that.
You're welcome. I'm glad you helped. So I think we're going to need to get off, given that that is the signal that I guess I've never gone over time and didn't realize that's what it was. So thank you for telling me that. Please email me your questions. I'm delighted to respond. And if I forget to send you those, email and remind me. And now we're at the end of day 4 of the Smartest Telesummit 2007. If you're happy with what's going on, please drop us a testimonial. The line, the phone line and the email is on the first page of your Inside Resources. See everyone tomorrow. We'll have Molly, who will deepen your relationship more to your work, Steve White, who will give you ideas about websites, and Oliver DeWall, who will show you alternative ways to get collectors. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye.